Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market creates win-win partnerships with our suppliers, and we'd love to tell their stories. Red Jacket Orchards is a family-owned farm in the Finger Lakes of the Hudson Valley that's grown for decades alongside Whole Foods Market. Their apples, pears, ciders, and juices are some of New York's best and seasonal staples for any kitchen. Come have a taste in one of our six Manhattan locations.
Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today I have quite the lady on the show. I'm joined by, I don't know if I'm going to get every title correct, personal chef, food writer, producer, what else?
Grocery shopper. I think that's about it.
Julia Tershin. Julia, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
You're one of the busiest ladies, I think, probably in the food industry. You've done a lot of things in a short amount of time, it seems. Let's see. You have worked on Mario Batali's book.
Mm-hmm.
That was also a television
exactly.
show. Spain, a culinary road trip, and then the show is Spain
on the road again. Except we were never on the road the first time, so I never understood that, but it's okay.
And you've done The Kimchi Chronicles, mm-hmm. which was also a book and a television show. Mm-hmm. You've just, not just come out with, but you've done Gwyneth Paltrow's cookbook, My Father's Daughter. You've worked on Goop. You're cooking all the time. Your recipe, I mean, oh my goodness. How do you do it?
It's a smorgasbord. But to me, it kind of all makes sense. I think all the work I do relates to each other. It's completely all about food. And my schedule is sometimes a little confusing, but I'm down for all of it. I enjoy it.
Are you really organized? You must
I'm
be.
Hyper organized.
Yeah.
I've had to become a little less organized to be able to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, so tell me about how you got into the culinary world in the first place.
I almost feel like I can't tell you because I can't quite remember. I've cooked since I was truly before I can remember. And I watched a ton of food television as a kid. Lots of PBS programming and, it was before the Food Network. And I was completely obsessed with the kitchen and what you could do in there and what you could provide. And I grew up, my parents were in magazines, and my father especially worked in a lot of what are called sort of like women's interest magazines, Family Circle and that kind of thing. And so I was around photo shoots and test kitchens and people who were producing stories about eating. And so my actually favorite pastime as a child, or one of them, was to play photo shoot, where I would arrange things, fruit or whatever it was, and pretend I was having a shoot. So, that was odd, but it's helped me at this point.
I think we're kindred spirits, because I think we're the
same
age. Did
you play photo shoot?
Oh,
too?
Yeah. No, I would pretend I was on, food TV.
My parents, my father now cooks quite a bit, but neither of them were cooking when I was growing up. And so I really did learn to cook from television. And my mother loves to joke that I would spend all these hours in the kitchen preparing all these things. Or I was really into potatoes for a long time, but that's a sidebar. And I would cook and cook. And then I kept placing all the dishes just to my side because I thought that's what you did with them. And I would end up with this stack. And I never knew someone else was washing them on television.
Magically disappear. Yeah. Well, what was your favorite TV show growing up, as a you know, culinary TV show.
I was obsessed with a show called Great Chefs of the World, which was on the Discovery Channel, which was a show that they had. It was in three sections, an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert. And each dish, they were in a different restaurant kitchen. But it was really before the sort of celebrity chef phenomenon. And the show was so simply produced. And it was like a single camera, and it was all voiced over, and these cooks were not talking to the camera. They were just preparing it. And this, I really wish I knew who did the voiceover, because this woman had like the most fascinating voice and was very convincing. And she would describe each step, and it was like the most straightforward show. And they would go, they had like great chefs of the American South or great chefs of the West Coast or whatever it was. And they would, I think if I remember correctly, they had a theme for each show. So it was like sort of all these really amazing French dishes, or I might be making that up, but I love that show. That was a big one.
I have to say I loved Two Fat Ladies.
Oh, of course. That was, yeah, yeah.
I think,
yeah.
You know, I'd never ever cooked the food, but I definitely loved, I just wanted to be in the sidecar at all times, you know? So speaking of Two Fat Ladies and traveling and, you know, culinary television, what was it like, you know, traveling around Spain? What were some of the places that you loved when you went there? And
So all that traveling was when we were shooting Spain on the Road again, and that was broken up over two trips. The first, I think, was, it's kind of all at this point a bit of a blur. I think the first trip was around 7 weeks, and then the second, which was sort of starting in like October through November, which was a great time to be there. And then the second trip was, I believe, March of the following year. And I think maybe we were there just maybe 2.5 more weeks or so. And what was it like? Mostly it was pretty exhausting. We didn't sleep very much. We were getting a lot of material with a lot of talent. And, you know, it was a lot of scheduling and fitting in a ton of stories. Because we did that program where we had them in hour-long episodes. And when you're on PBS, an hour-long program is pretty much an hour, which is a lot of content. But it was incredible. It was my first real job out of college, which was unbelievable. And if that was my entree to the professional world, it was, I mean, I'm pretty fortunate. And, you know, Mercedes sponsored our show, so we're driving around in these little hot rods. Well, I was assigned a station wagon, which I think suits me very well. But we were eating everywhere, and we were talking about food the whole time, and we were you know, cooking and finding people who made the best versions of whatever dish we were talking about. And it was really, it was a gift to work on that program and have that experience. My favorite, what did you ask? My favorite.
I mean, part? Did you, yeah, like, did you have a favorite region or maybe a favorite thing that you ate?
I really fell for Galicia, which is like the northwest corner of Spain, which is really rugged and it feels a little untapped, and, you know, it's not as popular as sort of the eastern coast of the country. And there's just something that feels a little like off the chart or almost forbidden or something. And incredible food comes from Galicia because it's, you know, you're on the coastline and it's really, really cold water, which produces some pretty great seafood, and everything's really simply prepared. And then because it gets a bit colder there and it's also quite mountainous, there's like these great stews and and it's in Asturias and, you know, that sort of, or next door. And then that whole region just is pretty rad when it comes to
delicious sort of, things.
And then it's like, that's the food. I've been really into this restaurant, Tertulia, that just opened, and that's the food that he's preparing. So
yeah, absolutely.
Strikes a chord.
Absolutely. Well, and you also went to Korea.
I did. Yes.
What was that like?
That was a very interesting experience for me because I had never been to Asia. That was, the first time I got to go there, and being a, sort of like a slightly, I mean, I'm not very tall, but being like a tall, white, Jewish New Yorker, like I was for the first time a real minority. So that was kind of a wonderful experience. But that was a great trip. And that, I felt like I learned so much because I really went into that knowing very, very little about Korean food or Korean culture. And then after writing the cookbook with Marjorie von Gerischten and just having that experience of going around shooting the show, I feel like I just had this unbelievable education.
What was the dish you ate and thought, oh my God, I had no idea this existed when you were there?
Well, we had some, I mean, I definitely in Korea had some of the more wild things I've ever consumed, just by my sort of Western standards. Also, again, mostly sort of varieties of seafood I never even knew existed. We had a Korean specialty, and I only had this once, and it's like a novelty. But I think historically it's quite a delicacy, is you have raw octopus, which is like a pretty gnarly food. You feel that
is
going
it,
down.
Yeah, just shaking and baking. Yeah, it's moving around.
Totally like suction cup weirdness.
Whoa.
And then we also ate raw sea squirt, which is like this really odd little creature.
Is it like a sea cucumber or?
Similar, but yeah. Sort of slimier, if you can imagine
what
that.
What is that texture like?
Pretty, like, awful, I'd say. Yeah. But
like eating a stress
and
ball.
Very bitter. Exactly. But then there were also, I mean, not to knock all this stuff, it's yeah. like, what was pretty amazing about all of that is how fresh it is. And Korea, like Spain, is a peninsula, so seafood really
is amazing.
Has a big, you know, part in all that.
Yeah.
But I had some pretty delicious things. I mean, I really, like, all the barbecue is just so good, and all that red chili that goes on everything, and, you know, the unabashed use of garlic, and it's, like, in your face, and I'm all for that.
Which is great. I think I should move to Korea, because right? It's, like, going on a first date, you know, and I was like, oh, I shouldn't eat garlic, you know, and
no,
you'd have a great time
they'd
there.
They'd be lining up at your door. No, when you get, I found when we flew to Seoul, getting off the airplane, you like smelled kimchi and garlic in the air, and it's sort of like you can't miss it. And then by the time we left, I felt like I like smelled nothing, and I was like, oh wow, this has become normal. So.
Is there anything you are allergic to or you won't
nope.
ever eat?
No.
No. So you'll eat anything?
I'll try anything, yeah.
Gotcha.
There's certain things I like. I mean, I'm not in any rush to have raw sea squirt again. I mean, I'm happy I tried it, and if something like that came along, I'd be down to try it. But I, I'll eat anything, and I'm very, very easy to please.
Well, so, you know, getting back to these projects that you were working on, what is it like to work with, to collaborate with chefs and food personalities? And
it's wonderful. I mean, it's... I feel fortunate to, you know, of course, to have had these experiences quite soon in my life and quite off the bat. And I feel like I get this unbelievable ability to sort of learn from all their mistakes so I don't have to make them on my own. But, you know, working with someone like Mario, who's been in the business for so long, who's so prolific, who's such a doer, it's... you know, you learn that sort of, you know, you can accomplish these things quickly and you can, you know, do them, and you just get the right team in place and, you know, and things can happen. And I feel the same way about Gwyneth, and, you know, you're all of a sudden you're working in a world where things really move, and that's a great place to be.
So walk us through a little bit about the process, like, mm-hmm. Let's say a cookbook writing process. Mm-hmm. How do you go about mm-hmm. writing the cookbook?
How do you go about writing a cookbook? You, you eat a lot. I feel like there's my big, rule that I try to stick to is that I feel like there's so many cookbooks and there's so many food shows and magazines and blogs, and the amount of content is astonishing. And so I really believe that if you're going to put anything out, it should only be something that only you can say, and, you know, it should come from a place of particularity. So working, you know, with Mario on the Spain book, you know, that was only a story he could tell about taking that trip with those three other people and, you know, the food that came with it. That was pretty straightforward. Working with Gwyneth on her cookbook had to come from a place of sort of authenticity particular to her and how food plays a role in her life and everything. So I try to start from that place and figure out what the story is and what makes it like only mine or only theirs, the person I'm working with. And because I never want anything just to fill space. I want everything to have a purpose on the page. And then I guess like step one is just trying to establish a map of some sort, a table of contents. And I think you have to start just by getting in the kitchen and really cooking, and after talking about these stories and recipes and, you know, and get moving on them. And then, you know, you get into testing and stuff, and then you sort of can edit down that list. And, you know, I say start with a really big list and then, you know, figure out what really sticks. And then there's all these long processes of editing and photography and all those kinds of things. But I think it has to start from a storytelling place.
You make it sound so easy.
Oh, God.
Effortless.
It is. Definitely not. I feel like a really good cookbook takes a lot of work, and to test all those recipes to make them really work, you know, is a huge amount of labor. And I think now that recipes are so prevalent, you forget what goes into writing a really good one. And the fact that you can look up any dish online, which is incredible, and, you know, and something I use, and but to really have a good one is comes from a place of major labor.
Yeah, it's tricky, mm-hmm. for sure. We unfortunately have to take a quick break, but we have a lot more to talk about with Julia Tertian when we get back. You're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Julia, Julia, don't turn your back on me. This is exactly what I dreamt last night. No surprise, boy, tell me what to offer me. I cut the circuit, slice off, grab a flashlight. I joke, I kid, anything I sat and wrote is how I live, Brooklyn to Malawi, what it is, knock suited up, handling the biz, who's gon' witness, a shot of Venus, all black humor, Alexander McQueen-ness, you ain't up on that, so let me fall back, had a missed call from Julia, let me call back,
Julia, Julia,
hey, hey. Head down, take a trip to Tobago. Go see our friends in Lagos. Sing sweet Soweto. Think we should lay low. Move through all around Boo. Sweet sunrises, natural herb in the jungle. Spices for me. I'm a trini.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman. And I'm joined today by Julia Tertian, who is a chef, a food writer, a producer, a professional grocery shopper. Mm-hmm.
Schlepper.
So much more. Before the break, we were talking about a lot of things, but most recently we were discussing cookbooks, and I would love to know, what are some of your favorite cookbooks right now?
Good question. Right now or
yeah. Or
of all
maybe
time?
Like a classic and one that you're totally excited yeah. about right now.
Well, it's funny. Yesterday I was in that, you know, that great bookstore, McNally Jackson. I keep wanting to call it Robinson because I don't understand why they changed their name. But anyway, and there's like amazing cookbooks out right now. This has been a great season. And I usually sort of, I feel like I'm jaded. I walk in and I'm like, oh, whatever. I, you know, seen that before. And there's a lot of really good new stuff out. And I had that moment where I'm like, I really just don't have room on a bookshelf. Like I need a new shelf. And it was nice to feel that. And I think people are putting out tremendous work, and I think cookbooks are becoming, current ones are getting a little bit more interesting, sort of more layered. Like there's that Mission Street Food book, which sort of is like a scrapbooky and collage esque, and I think there's something really cool about that. And you know, I flip through Jamie Oliver's new book and I always fall a little bit more in love, and
he's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always totally. I'm like, oh, you're married.
Don't. I feel like I would like kind of drop everything for him. I don't feel that way about many people, but like, it's funny because I always joke a little bit about, or not joke, but it's you know, for a living, I will happily write recipes. I think there's an art to that that I respect and I'm happy to work in. But when it comes to cooking, I don't actually ever use them. So cookbooks for me play much less a functional role than they do a sort of aesthetic lifestyle kind of thing. You know, cookbooks are something I flip through for, you know, inspiration for stories. And And I have to say, my whole life, the ones I love the most are Lee Bailey's books. And they were this great series, and they started in the 80s, and I, like, am a bit biased because my parents were his, like, art directors and designed his books, so I grew up with them, and well, obviously I grew up with my parents, but I grew up with the books. And I think that he just totally gets how certain meals can dictate a moment, you know, and can bring a certain group of people together and communicate something so specific. And all of his books are sort of set up as, not in terms of like soups and side dishes and all that, they're set up by meals, and I love that, and I adore his style, and I wish he was still around.
So okay, so Mission Street Food though.
Oh yeah,
your
yeah.
top pick for
that
right
was
now.
Yeah, I yeah. was looking at that yesterday. What else is, there's this, oh, I wish I remembered her name. She's a British cook and writer and very, very busy woman. And there's this new, it's a beautiful, huge blue book with sort of a fabric cover. And I think it's called like Borrowed and Stolen, or I'm totally butchering that. But that looks like such a beautiful book. And, you know, all of her travels and how she's cooked all over the world and has really kept track of all that. And what I really liked about that was that a lot of cookbooks come out so quickly these days, and that one I think is like just took years of real work. And Bought, Borrowed, and Stolen. I have to thank Google for that. Yeah, that's a stunning book.
Yeah. Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. There's so many cookbooks, and the styles are changing, and I think what people are gravitating towards is changing too, which is really interesting.
Yep.
When you're not doing cookbook stuff, you're a personal chef, and what would you say is the thing that, amongst all your clients, they always request from you that you're really great at cooking?
I feel like I make meatballs all the time.
Really?
This is like constantly, which... I make them all sorts of different ways. They're popular. But I think I have this huge belief now, having done quite a few years of private chef work, which is also nothing I ever planned for, but it was always like a great part-time job. And I've come to embrace it because it's a way that I get to keep cooking and keep actually doing this thing that I love to talk about and write about. And, you know, it keeps me involved in like the thing itself. But I think that, I mean, doing private chef work is doing like luxury work. You know, it's not a necessity. I come into people's homes and it's a complete luxury. And so I think if anyone is employing a private chef, they're usually, you know, of a certain sort of socioeconomic status that they can go probably eat at whatever restaurant they want. So I am a really simple cook, and I don't try to be anything different than that. And I think my food specializes in a certain comfort factor. And, you know, if you can go eat at any restaurant, when you're at home, you probably just want to be taken care of. So I try to provide that.
What do you like to cook on your day off?
On my day off, I don't like to cook.
Take out? Yeah.
But no, I actually do. I love to cook, and I cook very often with my best friend, and that doesn't feel like work at all. And we make pretty great meals that sort of, again, speak to the exact moment or wherever we are. Most recently, we got to spend a little time in Martha's Vineyard and ate very well and did a pretty extraordinary paella, which was wonderful because we got to use everything that's so local to that place. And you know, and then it was like I got to take, you know, these things I learned from Spain, and I bring my paella pan in the car and all that. But then it really was so particular to where we were, and it was so great because it worked there. Yeah, that was a really good meal.
What's your food guilty pleasure?
I think there's like no such thing.
No, I mean like...
A French fry.
Do you like eating
totally.
Crisco out of the tub? I don't know.
That's a good question. Lately, I have rediscovered cream cheese.
Ooh.
This is like a phenomenal thing. Like a really generous amount of it, like even on like a cracker.
Yeah.
Done and done. Yeah.
Are we talking like the
Philadelphia?
Sort of Philadelphia.
Total.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what's really good with that is pick and pepper sauce. Have you ever had that? Mm-hmm. That's like, as a kid growing up, my mom is from Texas, and when we were kids, we never, like, our friends would come over and that's what she would serve. Mm-hmm. And people were like, that's weird. And, you know, I realized later on in life, going to see my relatives in Texas, like, oh, it's, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Hot pepper, jelly sauce. So cream cheese. Good to know.
Yeah, cream cheese. What else? I think the only other sort of oddball thing, like the thing I sort of eat in privacy probably, is... I actually really don't mind leftover salad at all. I like a little wilted vinegar moment.
That is a kinda, first. Yeah. Okay.
Like for breakfast the next day.
Whoa.
Fried egg.
You're blowing my mind.
Yeah, done. That's a good one.
Wilted salad. Wilted salad.
That's a terrible
I can't name. Get by
Yeah. No, I don't blame you if you call it that.
Marinated.
I was about to say it's marinated lettuce. That's it.
Yeah, totally.
Much better.
Wow. I want to know what your favorite kitchen item is, a utensil or a gadget that you can't live without.
The thing I probably use more than anything, and I wish I didn't, are paper towels. I use those for lots of things. And I'm also slightly obsessed with parchment paper. But the thing, I don't know, I'm pretty simple. I don't use a ton of, I'm not big into gadgets, but I have an old microplane from when they first like started before like the gimmicky handles and stuff, and I use that for so much stuff. That's always like in my kit. I also use like metal, just regular like soup spoons constantly for everything. I feel like that's what I'm always reaching for. And I like that size when I'm stirring something, or it just feels sort of small and like I can sort of focus on that little bit of whatever I'm doing. I use a lot of like silverware, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There recently has been, I think she's New York based, a photographer who came out with a book, and I believe it's called My Last Supper.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for those listeners, Melanie, I think. Melanie, yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Melanie
Dunier or something.
Yes, exactly.
Probably not how you pronounce it, but
yeah, Dunny. something like that. I don't know. Regardless, for listeners out there that don't know, she's a photographer and she, you know, photographed and interviewed chefs about mm-hmm. their last meals, and it's really interesting. Like the two camps of responses were either mm-hmm. of comfort food or more about the technique or the mm-hmm. ingredient. And I would love to know what your last meal would be and why. That's like the hardest question.
I feel like I think about this question a lot, and every time I think about it, I have a different answer. I probably wouldn't be too upset if it was Roberta's pizza, but I love pizza. I love bread more than anything. My grandfather was a bread baker. I sadly never knew him, but I think this is like the thing. And it was funny because there were a few mentions in the new book, because she just came out with her second, which is 50 New Chefs. And I think more than once I read people whose last meal, they just wanted bread. And I've always felt like I would just love great toast for my last meal. And then like a few different things, like I'd like, you know, some really good butter around. I'd like some good olive oil, you know, whatever kind of fat to get on there.
Yeah.
Salt.
Some alcohol maybe, yes, since you know it's your last meal.
Lots of booze. A lot of tequila.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Major.
What kind of tequila?
Tequila and toast.
Great combination.
What kind of tequila? Something quite old, and I like a silver tequila or an aged one, and you know, some good limes, and probably near the water, and that'd be that. I'd like to just swim away.
That sounds great. That sounds like a vacation, actually. What can we expect to see from you in the near future?
I am... What can you expect? I hope something. I'm getting very increasingly interested in getting into more production, because I feel like my whole life thought I would just love to work on cookbooks, and that sounded like the life. And I have really gotten to do that, which has been extraordinary. And so I'm in this funny privileged spot of, having you know, I've done the thing I've dreamed of doing. So now I get to, you know, think about other things. And again, it really, to me, all comes down to telling great stories. And I think that television and even online sort of content, I think this is really how people receive information. So I'd like to think more about how I can tell the things I want to tell through that medium. So
do it, girl.
Right?
You're doing an amazing
job. Get a camera. No. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And your website is juliatertian.com, mm-hmm. not .net, correct?
I think it leads to .net. I'm getting someone to work
okay.
on that. Yeah. If anyone wants a job, please let me know. I need a redoer.
Do you have a Twitter account?
I do, which I was very...
You don't have to share
ambivalent about. I think it's just Tertian, yeah.
Okay.
Not to be confused with my brother, who is Ben Tertian on Twitter, and he loves to tweet about his
I'm going to find
him. Yeah, get it. Yeah, he'll be very pleased. He teaches spinning classes. I think he'd love new people.
Oh, I've heard about soul cycling,
right? Yeah.
Okay. I hear it's like a new religion, practically.
Oh, my brother, yes. I think, no, this is public information. He has quit his job as a lawyer to now full-time teach spinning classes. So yeah, get on a bike.
Oh my God, I need to. All I do is eat. So this is kind of perfect. Well, that about wraps things up for today.
That was so fast.
But Julia, thank you so much
this
for coming on the show.
A pleasure. Any time is an excuse to come to Roberta's.
Yeah, well, we'll have some pizza on the way.
Done.
And thanks to the crew at Roberta's. Thanks to Jack Inslee, Carlos Salguero, the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and tune in next week.
Turkey and jam, macaroni and ham. Say, do you like steak? I can surely make. If you hear me now, sing it loud for me, cry.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Food Karma. To kick off the New York City Meat Week in style, Meat with a Twist will bring together the best chefs and mixologists for a cocktail food pairing party on November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Meat with a Twist features 10 cocktails paired with 10 chef selections highlighting local, sustainably grown meat such as duck, lamb, chicken, pork, beef, bison, and ostrich. The party will launch a week's worth of events throughout the city that celebrate the slow food movement bringing sustainable meats to our tables. Again, that's November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Updates, tickets, and more information are available at meatweeknyc.com.